The
I
Android
definitely
has
love the
been
feeling
the phone for
of
me.
ignoring my phone during a flight. And ever since, wireless became too simple to get on flights, it's made me largely uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. Man.
You should not be able to contact me up here.
No. You're all the way in the sky.
All the way in the
Right.
sky. Sending out a tweet alerting people to watch Debatable right now. This is good fake television. That is sent. Hello, Bill Barnwell. Welcome back. This is our friend Bill Barnwell, the greatest football writer at ESPN. That is Israel Gutierrez. Let me see if I can figure
Top
this
five,
out.
at least.
Yes. Well, the greatest flag football player at ESPN. Although now that I think about it, I feel like Randy Moss
No.
probably pretty good at flag
Yeah.
football.
If we're doing
Ooh.
rankings.
You should ask him if he wants to play in my league, though. We got some openings.
Who would
Wow.
you, Izzy, who would you put on your flag football team from ESPN if you could?
Randy Moss, five times.
Five times five, Randy Mosses.
Jeff Saturday is just useless to you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, he can shuffle his feet like a typewriter, but we don't really need that nonsense. I'm glad this is where we're starting, by the way, without me having to force the subject.
It was gonna happen anyway. It was gonna happen anyway. I like the idea though of like Rex Ryan being on your coaching staff though. Rex Ryan, by the way, who has, I feel like he's addressed this before publicly, but just what he did yesterday as ESPN's premier non-kink-shaming fake television show, salute to Rex Ryan for just being his freakiest self. I applaud you, sir.
Let
Why
his
hide
flag,
it?
yeah, let his flag fly. At the end of the day, like, I don't know the proclivities, is that the appropriate word, of
Sure.
everybody on the,
Proclivities.
yeah, the proclivity for everyone on the GetUp staff, but now I know one person, and that's fine. I don't need to know everyone, but a couple people, I think it's just fair to find out.
Between Rex Ryan and Dominique, it's a real
Oh.
band of just sexual degenerates. Which I say again,
Which they used to call the NBA not too long ago,
non-judgmentally.
actually.
Alabaster, you got anything stitched into your freak
You have
flag you want
any
to fly for us?
direction for us?
You know,
We need it.
I think I don't even know where I'm gonna go with this one. We'll start with the Rams and the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And
Just
our
put your
question
weird
is.
hand on camera and let us take it from
That's
there.
right. Do we have tiny feet that we can play with on
We
the
do. We'll bring them out.
box?
Our first
Put those
question:
cat fingers on.
after losing to the Rams, are the Cardinals who we thought they were?
I feel like we could have easily started this show with a is Matt Stafford who we thought he was? I mean, that was where my brain went, Bill Barnwell, because Matt Stafford, and I'll frame this so I can absolve myself of any of the arguments that you're about to debunk here. One of them is very obvious, though. Matt Stafford was 0-17. That was his record. I know QB record is not team record, et cetera, although we treat it that way as I am right now. But he was 0-17 against teams with, I believe, records that were five games above 500. He had never had a game like this in that sense.
Really?
And also, Bill, shout out to ESPN Stats and Info for that statistic, which I throw to you to incinerate in some form. But the other thing is, Matt Stafford just looked better than he had all season against a defense that I believe Football Outsiders had as a top three defense in Arizona. So I wasn't
Wow.
aware that Matt Stafford necessarily could look like this. And
You
yes,
just
I'm
made
respecting
Bill
his
say
current
wow
prowess.
twice, by the way, with that information.
Double wow.
Multiple stat polls from Pablo Torre citing places I would normally go. I feel like Pablo is coming from my job when you have like 17 other jobs at ESPN. Let
That's
me have
right,
at
Bill.
least the one job I have left as football writer. I would say that Matthew Stafford for the first half of the season was my pick as NFL MVP. That's how well I thought Matthew Stafford
Boom.
was playing over the first half of the season. Now, Matthew Stafford for the last few weeks has been pretty bad. He's made some terrible decisions. He's looked banged up. Like there was a Diana Rossini tweet that had Matthew Stafford, like every single part of his body was injured in this tweet somehow. And
Yes.
it's not a surprise that he has been struggling. But to me, I think like the core components of what he has to do in this offense are still there. And even when we saw him struggling in those moments, he still made great throws here and there. It wasn't like he was just broken in the way that like a Chad Pennington was, where he couldn't throw the ball more than 10 yards downfield.
Rhodes just, like, finalist Chad Pennington.
Is that true?
You remember. Oh, yes. At a Marshall? Wow. Yeah, man. A gentleman and a scholar. Yeah.
And a teammate, of Randy Moss. Coincidentally, that's bringing right. It slightly full circle. It felt like he was just sort of inconsistent. It wasn't like he was broken. And so to see him play at this level, I'm not really surprised. Like, this is a Cardinals team that has some holes in the secondary. I thought the Rams offensive line did a great job. And Matthew Stafford was just, he was on his game. It felt like as the game went on, he got better and better.
If this is where we come to pat ourselves on the back, I called Stafford as a potential MVP candidate before the season did. So
there
if this is
around
the horn, it would probably be either points or a mute. I'm not even sure. Yeah, and so the other part is you know, you talked about, Pablo, the wins not being a quarterback stat, but it should be a little bit more of a quarterback stat, A, when he plays like that, and B, when he plays like that without some key components, one on the defensive end and Jalen Ramsey and, you know, Taylor Higbee, right? Was it Taylor or Tyler?
Tyler.
Tyler Higbee and Taylor Heinicke, right?
Yes.
We've been practicing. Yes. You do all that without those key figures, and you think, yeah, like, this guy must have contributed greatly to this win, and so maybe he should get some credit for it. The NFL's just been so ridiculous with the guy. Like, you know, I've been watching Tua Tagovailoa very closely, and, you know, he is ridiculously accurate. And then you look around the league, and it's like, man, all these guys are putting just the ball on a dime everywhere. And when you've got a guy like Cooper Kupp, who can – can get open anywhere, right? And if you need that, a sliver of space to get him the ball. And so, yeah, Matt Stafford had his sort of lull during the middle of the season, but he recovered from that. Something that I don't think Jared Goff ever had done or could do, right? Once he got in the doghouse of his coach McVay, there was no coming out of that for him. But Stafford, absolutely. So, yeah, he should get a lot of credit for that. But this offense should be the side that carries them, even though with those big names, because we haven't seen the Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, just absolute dominant defense for a long stretch of the season.
But we did see Aaron Donald, Bill, start this game off by pushing an offensive lineman whose name, and this is good for the offensive lineman in question, whose name I do not recall right now, pushed him to the ground into somebody else and then got to Kyler Murray. That was the first thing I saw last night.
Yeah, I was walking into the room as that play was happening, and I just saw Aaron Donald on top of somebody. And I'm just like, oh, this is how this game is going to go. Like, yes. I missed the first play. This is going to keep happening. And we saw it at the very end of the game on that weird play where, like, Kyler was calling a fake spike and everyone else on the team thought it was a real spike. And those two things did not meet well, which was, I think, was the problem. And I think to get to, like, the question here, like, I feel like, yes, Matthew Stafford played great.
Question.
But to get to the Cardinals side of things here, it does feel like this is what we thought the Cardinals would be, because this felt like a very 2020 Cardinals loss to me, where it felt like they were competitive, their stars played really well. Kyler Murray, though, it felt like in this game, when they were going to have success, it wasn't because they were scheming up easy throws. It wasn't like they were, you know, creating the sort of things off of play action that the Rams create for Matthew Stafford. It felt like Kyler Murray had to make magic happen to hit a 20-yard completion over and over and over again. And we saw him do that a few times in this game, and he was awesome at those plays, but there weren't those easy solutions in the red zone where he was intercepted. There weren't easy solutions on 4th-and-1 where the Cardinals had a drop on a contested pass and had a James Conner stuff. It felt like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins had to make a spectacular catch. James Conner had to make a spectacular catch. It didn't feel like Cliff Kingsbury, this guy who we treat as an offensive genius, a guy who has that job because of his offensive know-how and firepower, it feels like so often against good football teams, they don't have the easy solutions for Kyler Murray that other teams have for their star quarterbacks.
Can we talk about that 4th-and-1 play? Like, it seemed so casual and so nonchalant that I was like, was that 4th or was the graphic wrong? Because, like, A, I know it's 2022, and I know, you know, Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray exist, right? But you do need some version of a running game to be decent in the NFL, or at least to make the most out of what you have. And they don't have one when Kyler Murray's doubling up, I think, your next best rusher in this game. And so you go and you just draw to James Conner there. Like, it seemed pretty uninspired, and in the moment, like, you need more than that. No, it makes you question the idea of even going for it when you call that play.
So, speaking of going for it and having no idea what you're gonna do, Alabaster just tried to put a card down, but it was upside down, and the card, of course, was producer interjection,
dramatic,
calling his own number. So Alabaster,
this
what do you
is
want?
Really gonna take the steam out of this point, but
okay,
Izzy, you You called him Taylor Higbee when Tyler Higbee was on a card on the screen, and also it's 2021.
That is a good point from Alabaster.
Say almost 2022.
You're living in the future, as you often are, Israel.
Alabaster, you were so desperate to get that in that you put the card on upside down.
I mean, I had a sense of urgency on fourth and one there.
Emergency interjection. I figured someone had just died and we were going to have to talk about it live on the show.
No, I just killed off the rest of this year. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, everybody.
So hold on a second, though, because embedded in Bill's sort of very rational analysis there was, I think, a pretty great burn on Cliff Kingsbury, Izzy, which is that against good teams, he looks a lot dumber than his reputation would suggest, Bill. And is that, in fact, what is happening here?
Are we asking me or is he?
Oh, I'm asking
you. Well,
you,
we're asking you because I'm not ready to call a head football coach dumb, so after you.
Yeah, no, okay. We're going to be the kids on the chain link fence hanging and going, ooh, while you answer this question.
It's finally a chance for me to get at Cliff Kingsbury, a man who has everything. Great looks, an incredible house.
An unnecessary fire in his backyard. It's 110 degrees.
In Arizona, just in case it drops below 85, you need that fire pit set up. But, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, I think, is a guy who was getting legitimate Coach of the Year sort of nominations. Like, Bill Belichick's going to be involved. Matt LaFleur should be getting consideration. But, Cliff had the best record in football. And the Cardinals had been pretty good up to this point. There had been some sloppy games here and there, but I mean, they beat Tennessee. They blew out Tennessee. They played better against the Rams the first time these two teams played, if I'm not mistaken. They played competitively with the Packers. Yeah, I mean, they're a legitimately good football team, and I think Cliff is not a bad coach by any means, but just you really felt okay, here's your opportunity to pull out this play that nobody's expecting. Here's this, fourth and one, you have this incredible quarterback who makes magic happen. Put him in a situation where he can use his strengths. Instead, they just ran inside zone. They ran a zone read concept, and Tyler handed the ball off, and they got stuffed. It felt in this game, there just were those opportunities for Cliff to separate and be like, hey, this is why I'm here. And then on top of that, the whole late game field goal fiasco. I know what the math is. I feel like Cliff Kingsbury personally let Brian Griese down. And as a teammate, I don't like to see that happen to Brian Griese.
Brian Griese was calling for the field goal on first down, correct?
But you know what? I appreciate that. As a man who holds on to his priors until the very end, you got to go with that read. Once you're on the field goal bandwagon, you're not jumping off. And I think that at the end, they should have gone for it.
Brian Griese, is he trying to kick field goals in flag football is where my mind just went. Yes.
I've actually seen on women's games and some other league, they have these poles that just kind of prop up and all of a sudden you've got a field goal, whatever you call those things. And they're kicking field goals in that
upright
game. But if I'm upright, thank you. If I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I would like to just coach well enough for long enough where the first thing people say about me isn't that I'm really good looking. I would like to sort of have compliments about my actual coaching ability, because I watch this game. I watch this game on both sides, frankly, but I look and I think to myself, man, if there was going to be a Cardinals Patriots Super Bowl, it's probably going to be a 3-point output by the Cardinals, because Bill Belichick is absolutely going to outcoach them, and that's entirely unnecessary.
I mean, no, it is necessary. Cliff Kingsbury, we've said this. Debatable is where you get the truth. A lot of people say, I'm gonna quote every Substack now. A lot of people tell you that they're telling you the truth. But no, only we do that. And Cliff Kingsbury is the most overrated, allegedly handsome coach in the NFL.
Is this a Substack, to be clear?
This does have subscription components. If you want to subscribe and pay a fee, you will get even more shirtless photos of Izzy lying on a train track.
Sorry, hold on.
Venmo. There's also some with me wearing a shirt, but in a pool, which,
that's, you know what? The vault is full of these content delights. But I also want to point out something, because we talked, Izzy, you brought up Cooper Kupp in a very complimentary way, and I want to quadruple down on that. Is Cooper Kupp the greatest fantasy football player of all time? Can we say that yet? Because he has been putting up numbers in the world of fake football that are wildly impressive. And maybe it's just because I seem to be losing to Cooper Kupp.
I'm going to age myself real quick. But pre-PPR and like pre a lot of things, I drafted Randy Moss as a rookie my first year playing fantasy football. And man, that dude was a stud. So I don't really know if Cooper's the greatest of all time, but when you throw in PPR in there, it's like, the hey, I would target that guy 20 times a game if I could. And yeah, he's probably going to catch 13 to 15 of those. So he's probably on that short list of, you know, new age, today's era of fantasy football.
I feel like Vegas is just scrambling to get those Randy Moss over under 5.5 references on today's episode of Debatable Props off before we're 10 minutes in. We talked about Randy Moss like 5 times already. Here's the thing about Cooper Kupp. Like, yes, he is good, and I think he's been an awesome player, obviously, in fantasy football. He's carried several of my teams to good places, but he's also kind of the guy where, like, as the most prominent white wide receiver, like, your friend who plays in the fantasy football league who pays the least attention to football definitely drafted Cooper Kupp. He's like, oh, I know Cooper Kupp.
Yeah,
I'm going to take him. And so I feel like that team has been propped up, and they're in the playoffs now. Whereas, like, the real, like, connoisseurs of football, they took Cordarrelle Patterson. Cordarrelle Patterson is the real dream fantasy football pick.
Yes, this is the football snobbery that we expected when we said we need Bill Barnwell on Debatable.
I was going to counter that and say, like, was Cooper Kupp really the big name going to? Because I remember people talking up Robert Woods like he was the number one receiver on this team. And I was like, no, Cooper Kupp is the guy who's always open every time I see him. But yeah, I guess that's true. I guess by the time this year started, he had created that name recognition.
I mean, he's reframed the entire expectation level, you know, of I mean, well, who's the best comparison for this? Is it Eric Decker walked so Cooper Kupp could fly? Where are we going there? Is it
Well,
Eric
he's
Decker?
He's kind of like Cole Beasley with some more size, is he not? Like, because he's got the, you know, the saucy feet. He kind of gets open whenever he wants to. I don't know if he has that explosive, you know, speed after the catch. But, yeah, I guess, I don't know. It's a white receiver thing.
It's like known, boy, do I have to put him allegedly in here? Rumored Kentucky Derby substance user Wes Welker, committed himself to the game and became a Cooper Kupp.
Yes, Wes Welker, his eyes wildly dilated, kind of looks like what I look like when I see how many points I'm losing to because of Cooper Kupp in fantasy football. Alabaster. What's next?
Real quick on Cooper Kupp, by the way, before we get Alabaster going. He gives off a little bit of Shroot Farms energy, like with that the beard and the hair. Like the most fit, you know, employee at Shroot Farms. Yeah. But he definitely comes across as that a little bit.
So you feel like he was chasing animals around, and that's how he developed
his
speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how he got that quickness.
That's how I feel. Like, that's what separated me from getting into the NFL. I just didn't have any animals around me in Queens to chase around.
My sister had a pet chicken named Sonny, and then we realized it was a rooster and was waking everybody up. So I don't know what happened. I think a cat might have eaten that thing. Anyway,
I don't know what happened to Sonny. Also worthy of the allegedly card being thrown down.
100%. That felt like it was like a useful piece of information. Like, it felt like it was going to be this story with a moral, and then there was no moral to the story.
Nope.
No.
Whatever happened to Sonny.
Just the beginning of a sad true crime podcast, Alabaster.
Poor Sonny. All right, moving on to our next topic. How should leagues respond to surging COVID cases?
So this is one of those times when I'm like, historically, I instinctively almost want to like yell at the NFL and yell at the leagues. But then I remember that something fascinating is happening where the NBA and the NFL, and there are criticisms valid that we could levy against them, and we will, but they're also conducting one of the most like forward public facing experiments in what happens when you collect hundreds of human beings and have them tested regularly. So we know, for instance, that 46 NBA players have entered health and safety protocols this season, 31 of them coming in the last 2 weeks. And that is information that does kind of jive, I think, with the real world. Like, this is some stuff that is indicative of how COVID's going in America. And by the way, those are players, reportedly, 97% of whom have been vaccinated, right? So this is something that even among those who are taking precautions, it's worth noting, and this is where I think the prescriptive what should we do about this thing part of the conversation enters, get boosted, right? Like, get your microchips in you, allegedly. About 200 of those guys have gotten them already, the booster, mm-hmm. not the microchips, that was a joke. For those who are going to label this episode as one of those like vaccine warning things on Instagram, it's very annoying.
Oh, no.
But that seems to be what you do, as well as like ramping up testing and making sure that everybody's actually abiding by their protocols and actually did get vaccinated, as opposed to, you know, hand in fake vaccine cards, which is another thing that has become part of the conversation in recent months too.
Now, two things. One with semantics on the fake vaccine card. I just want to throw this out there. I don't believe Antonio Brown had a fake vaccine card. He had a real vaccine card that didn't actually get the vaccine. So that's you know, anyway, it doesn't really matter. He faked being vaccinated is what I'm saying. Not that, like, you know, those cards are real. A doctor would have them, and a doctor would take money and then throw away the vaccine. But anyway, this is all allegedly.
No. That's a very Miami. It's a very South Floridian distinction.
It's exactly what it is. Yes, exactly that. to me, I look
real paperwork. It's just fake information.
right. So I look at this and I say, you know, basically the sports leagues have sort of been giving us a picture, like you say, Pablo, of, you know, how this can be handled. And in this case, you know, how it you experience it when you have a high percentage of vaccinated players, to which, you know, we should still be taking it seriously. We should still get tested regularly. And maybe that's what the league needs to do, is ramp up the testing again, just to make sure that these outbreaks don't create for these postponements. But, you know, I look at this and I say, maybe Kyrie Irving is actually trying to save us all, okay? Because if we say, all right, so you saw the Instagram video, right, where he's putting on his shoes and there was a report that supposedly maybe he might be back. And I don't know if this has anything to do with him taking the vaccine, or maybe he's going to just play road games, I don't know. But if he does get vaccinated after a period of time saying, well, not only was I against mandates, but I really, really wanted to do a significant amount of research and let time pass. And, you know, now I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll get the vaccine. Maybe the rest of the country will say, wow, if even Kyrie Irving is going to get vaccinated and sees the benefit of it, maybe I will too. And so I'm starting to wonder if Kyrie Irving is the hero we all needed throughout this entire time.
Bill, Israel Gutierrez, noted political genius now, has identified Kyrie Irving as America's vaccine swing vote.
There it is.
There we go. Classic card. Perfect. I mean, when I think about this from the NFL perspective, like, Monday was the first day that vaccinated players were all tested since prior Monday, with Omicron becoming a larger and larger variant of concern in the U.S. And we saw a much higher rate of positive tests. There are now teams who are in the, I believe it's the mitigated protocol now, where it is Zoom meetings instead of in-person meetings. It's daily testing for vaccinated players. I think the stuff that's going to happen now, we're going to see more positive tests over the next few days. And I think worst of all, we're going to see so many different NFL quarterbacks struggle to get in touch with a very busy Joe Rogan over the days to come. They're not used to waiting is the problem.
That's right.
I mean, I think like the reality here is that this decision may end up being made for these teams and these leagues in question. We've seen NHL teams have to cancel games. We've seen NBA teams have to cancel games. Aaron Rodgers has already missed a game this year and may have to miss more. I mean, Premier League teams, it's happening in other countries as well. We're seeing this become a significant variant of concern and already affecting leagues. And so I think the NFL will do everything possible to avoid stopping the league or suspending the league. We'll see them maybe use Kendall Hinton as a quarterback for like four or five different teams in the weeks to come. But I think
if you look at the years or the last previous seasons, we've kind of experienced these outbreaks at one point or another, early in the season in baseball, you know, at other points during the NBA, I guess last year. And So I think the idea of, you know, with such a high percentage of vaccinated players, the conversation's not going to be like it was maybe 6-7 months ago. Hey, see, the vaccine doesn't work. Instead, the conversation is, okay, well, we can control these outbreaks without fearing so much about the health of our players, and maybe even make top priority. Well, this is not top priority, more of a priority of just making sure that the leagues continue to go forward and avoid these outbreaks, you know, and figure out how they can avoid them going forward. And like I said, maybe it's, you know, testing the vaccinated players a little bit more often. But I do believe, you know, it's just kind of one of those deals where it just doesn't look nearly as bad as an outbreak if you have a bunch of vaccinated and boosted players, and maybe the rest of the world can recognize that.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Izzy, because there is, of course, there is always the caveat, right? There is the guy who got COVID in these times, hashtag in these times, and is saying, man, I really thought I wasn't going to make it. End quote. That was Joel Embiid. And so it's worth noting that, as always, like, there is
someone reportedly vaccinated, right? I thought when I read that he wasn't, but I guess he reportedly is.
No, sure. And I think part of that's also, I think, the other part of the conversation is, in the NBA, reportedly, a large number of the guys got the J&J vaccine. And that was the one-shot deal. You don't need a second dose, right? That was the upside of it. But now, scientific consensus, as the card via Alabaster is presented, that yes, the consensus is that there's a higher rate of breakthrough infection if, in fact, you got the J&J vaccine. And so the good news is, if you get a booster and it's Moderna, you get some sort of like Infinity Gauntlet kind of combinatorial effect where actually it's awesome for you. So again, the boosting part of this seems to be where everybody is going to have to go. And the question, as per usual, is, well, how does the league sort of mandate that? And what kind of pushback will there be in, and this is for clarity's sake, the very end of 2021, a year we are still very much in?
Yeah,
I don't understand why there would be pushback on a booster if you've already been vaccinated. Like, a booster is, you know, essentially a half of a dose of the vaccine. So I don't know how many players are just pushing back on that as if, you know, unless they had some ill effects and something that they would just really wanted to avoid again.
No, but I'm with you. I mean, in theory, Bill, like, this does feel solvable. And the worry, as you said before, is that, look, the Chicago Bulls only had like 8 players that they could put into a game. And so that game for tomorrow, I believe, got postponed already. And if you're the NFL, of course, which does not take suspension of games, postponements of games nearly as lightly, it does feel like there should be a unilateral show of bureaucratic incentive to get all of this straight away.
I mean, we're seeing NFL teams now mandate boosters. I think it's by the end of December, like December 27th of, to be clear, 2021 is when that booster has to come in by. And that's, you know, I agree with Izzy. Like, I feel like if you got the two shots, if you got the one shot J&J, I can't imagine that you're going to be like, oh, I have to get a booster to it. Maybe it's just that feeling of, oh, like, is this ever going to end? Like, can I get past this? Because there were players in every sport who sort of begrudgingly got it and like, okay, well, at least I'm past it. I'm done now. I don't have to worry about it again. And I think there will be players who either publicly or privately who are a little concerned about, okay, how many times am I going to get this booster? Like, when is this ever going to end? There's no answer to that question, but I can see players being frustrated by that reality, just as some people in America understandably are.
Yes. And I think, again, like, this is where the horse I'm riding gets a little bit higher. The difference between the likelihood of transmission between vaccinated and unvaccinated people, it is significant. So yes, the virus can be transmitted, but it is far less likely to occur if, in fact, you have been vaccinated and boosted and allegedly full of the microchips that Kyrie Irving wants you to believe, allegedly, are in a non-plant-based vaccine, Alabaster.
I will say, it really hit home today when I saw that Clyde Frazier had been placed
in the safety protocol. Ugh.
Because we're, I, you know the sad Fox injury music?
Yes.
When a player gets hurt?
Yeah.
We're very close to a sad Bing Bong, and I don't want to get to that point.
Sad Bing Bong, sad Go New York, Go New York, Go with the acoustic version of that song. I'm prayers up for Clyde Frazier in a real way, Alabaster.
Yep. And speaking of sad Bing Bongs, Steph Curry is going to break the all-time three-point record in MSG tonight. What do you expect from Steph Curry?
Alabaster is back. Alabaster is back.
I'm pretty sure they would have dumped me if I would have said that segue, but okay.
I will say my fantasy football team, the Sad Bing Bongs, has been beating up on Pablo with Cooper Kupp. It's been great.
Yeah, yeah. Look, as Bing Bonging at MSG is going to go tonight, tickets are available if you want to pay 15 million times what face value is, and deservedly so, Izzy, because yes, Steph Curry is 2 threes away from breaking Ray Allen's all-time record, and it's funny to talk about this record because I never thought about it until it became clear that Steph was about to break it, and it's one of those things where it's like, we already called Steph the greatest shooter of all time. We've been doing that for years. We know he's better at shooting deep threes than anyone who has ever lived. And this just feels like an excuse to have a Steph Curry party.
Yeah. And you know what? He's been slumping since he said, which, by the way, it speaks to how great he is, when he said, yeah, I'm going to go for the record when there's 16 left, which is two more than the all-time record. And we're just like, okay, this might happen today. Like, that's the ultimate calling your shot. Like, it's not a home run. It's 16 home runs in a game. And so I do think that, you know, it just shows how great he is. I'm intrigued by the idea of, like, you know, it happening at MSG, like him getting too early and then getting 14 more and still breaking that record on the day that he breaks the record. It also is interesting, too, that, like, I think of things that happened at MSG and 95% of it are from the opposing team. Like, there aren't really, outside of Carmelo going for, you know, a good couple game winners or a couple big shots against the Bulls, and then Linsanity, and then back to the 70s.
Is Steph, basically. Yeah, and Kyrie and LeBron. But it is, Bill, I mean, 2013, it's worth remembering this, right? 2013, Steph Curry, this is before he becomes the Steph Curry messianic figure that has inspired the children of America to torment their parents by presumably denting the hoods of so many cars and driveways, shooting 50-foot threes. Before that, it was 2013, and Steph Curry decided to play 48 minutes at the Garden, and he had, what, 54 that night? And that was kind of the beginning of all of this. And so Steph Curry, to me, is a showman unlike anyone who has existed in his generation. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the debate. The debate can be had about, like, well, where does he rank historically, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of who would I rather pay money to see, it would be Steph Curry at Madison Square Garden, above and beyond any other combination of human being and venue.
I was talking about this, actually, with Scott Van Pelt recently when we were off air on SportsCenter. We talked about, there's a certain archetype of player where it's, number one, hard to dislike them. You know, I know lots of people here at ESPN.
There's
a hair joke
Bill's
there somewhere,
topic.
But I just can't do it.
No.
Like, there is a certain archetype of player where the fun factor is so high and the unique factor is so high that it's like they're like attention to, like, they're like, you have to tune in to watch them. You have to see them when they come by. Like, I feel like Pedro Martinez, like right around like his peak turn of the century, was like that kind of player. It was just, he was so much better than everyone else at what he was doing. And I feel like Steph is that kind of player as well. And if this was, I don't know, I don't want to pick on Clay, but like if Clay was breaking the 3-point record, we would not be having the same celebration. It would not be getting the same kind of attention. Like, it wouldn't be getting the sort of treatment where it's like the fake Facebook holiday where it's like, oh, this is National Sister Day. Like, you know, this is...
It does feel like a Google Doodle is going to emerge as soon as Steph does this. Yeah, no, it does. Yes. It's bigger. It's bigger than the mere basketball of it. It's the idea also. And look, Clay is interesting as a counterpoint here, Izzy, because I do feel like Clay pulls spectacularly well. But let's be honest here. Like, the number of people who dislike Steph Curry, who is talked about on television, on audio media everywhere this often, it's startling how popular he remains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with good reason. It's not just the 3-point shooting. It's not, you know, because obviously Clay owns that 14 in a game record. But it's just how he gets them. It's the distance of them. It's also the joy that he injects into the game because, you know, you mentioned the showman stuff. And, like, the next name that came to mind is a guy that, you know, when he gets to this level of having something to prove or showing out is LaMelo Ball. Like, I think not only does that guy have the ability and all that stuff, but he's a showman and he brings joy to the game. And I think that that has not ended for Steph. In fact, like, you got a guy like Draymond Green who – like, in the history of the NBA, would be considered an unlikable guy, right? Because whether it be the groin kick, whether it be the style of basketball that he plays, and yet, you know, Steph Curry just elevates him to, you know, a guy who's going to be the next Charles Barkley in his, you know, post-playing career. And so there's just something about he just lights up the court and the scoreboard and just the game in general. And so, like, yeah, it's one of the best, most, you know, memorable, one of the most likable athletes of all time, period.
He's a job creator, Alabaster. Steph Curry is a job creator into players' retirement, is what Izzy just said there.
Yes. Izzy, I do have a question. Are you sure LaMelo Ball is the heir to that throne and not Tyler Hero or KZ Akpala or Max Strus or Kyle Lowry?
Max Strus.
I mean, Max Strus. Don't sleep on Strus, man. That guy can hit some shots.
Don't sleep on Strus.
From
a sentence no one has ever said before.
Yeah, not even the Strus family. The Strus family is encouraging you to take a nap. Here's my question for you guys. Like, from the perspective of Tom Thibodeau, how mad is he that Steph is going to do this against his team at MSG?
So all I know is that Julius... So they're going to do like a box in one kind of a deal, right? Like, they're going to assign everybody to Steph as they should. Julius Randle is going to be so tired by the end of this game. Oh, my Lord. Like, Julius Randle, you thought your knees hurt playing for Tibbs before? After tonight, you're going to want to, like, reconsider, various life decisions you've made.
I did want to kind of sit there on the sad Knicks. And I know Pablo's fandom is kind of like, you know, all over the place with that team. But, like, this year, so far, something of a disaster, no?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Sad bing-bonging. It's just been sad bing-bongs everywhere. it's... I mean, but to the point of, like, what is MSG great for? It is a concert venue for people, stars to come in from out of town and blow away the city of New York. And that is part of it. I mean, that's the sadness of it. I mean, I don't want to turn this into just sad Knicks fanning because I'm not really even a Knicks fan anymore. That's how sad a Knicks fan I am. But yeah, like, the potential of this building is evoked every time you see an enemy of this state come in and become beloved. I mean, that was the Kyrie story too when he wore the mask in the previous version of Kyrie where we made Hero kind of jokes and actually felt non-problematic about it. Yeah.
And not Tyler Hero jokes, to be clear.
By the way, shout out to Alabaster there for even just knowing KZ Akpala off the top of his head. And while we sort of put a bow on this, I actually might have some friends that want to sleep on Max Strus. Next subject! Wow!
Wait a minute. I'm going to Google Max Strus as Alabaster moves the show along.
I actually don't
really know what he looks like. Compare
him to Cliff Kingsbury for me. Give me a ranking of...
Max, like, 20 years younger. Strus is about 20 years younger, also has the eyebrows that Cliff Kingsbury would dream of.
Oh,
like, very good dark brows. Yeah, just like kind
if somebody
of like
told you he was
eyes.
Yeah, if he played for the Italian league before he got to the Miami Heat, you'd absolutely believe it.
He played for Virtus Bologna. That's where he got his
all of it. Just to say, perfect resident of the city of Miami, Alabaster.
Absolutely. High zaddy factor with him. And now it's time to play a game. And that game is whodunit. We'll give you a quote. You guys come together and let us know whodunit. The first one. What the heck is wrong with me? Exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point. Facepalm emoji, facepalm emoji, facepalm emoji, facepalm emoji. Out there just having a good time while doing what I love to do. Crying, laughing, crying, laughing, crying, laughing, crying, laughing, period. Goggle emoji. And your choices are Steph Curry, Giannis, LeBron, or Kawhi?
It was Kawhi.
Has any quote been more obviously LeBron? Like, even more so than 5, not 6, not 7. The emoji usage can only come from one man. The alternating exclamation point question marking can only come from one phenomenally corny greatest player of all time.
100%. I mean, shout out to him knowing to put the period before the quotation mark, which is great at the end of that. But yeah, way too many emojis. Mm-hmm. Definitely LeBron.
We all agree here.
Alabaster? Oh, so this is what actually prompted this, right? Because who's the guy who was wearing the glasses?
34?
Yeah. Shout out to you for becoming a... Oh,
Wendell Carter Jr. There you go.
Of course. Yeah. Shout out to Wendell Carter Jr. and Wendell Carter Sr. for that matter. I apologize for disrespecting your lineage, but you've only become a literal prop for LeBron James.
This feels like... This feels like it's in the same universe as a Magic Johnson tweet, but it's like somehow all the way the opposite in the same way. Like it's like 359 degrees of earnestness away.
Yes.
Like it's a total joke.
When it gets like the response from Kevin Durant, who initially said, "What's wrong with you, KD? I'm dying," or King James, "I'm dying over here." And they had a nice little exchange. I think LeBron said, "I was just trying to see if I can improve my vision out there." It's just something about the sort of the face that he makes with no reaction, just kind of looking through these things. Like you see those videos of children who like put in earpieces for the first time and can hear for the first. It's kind of like what he was waiting to happen when he put on those goggles. And it was just like, nope, nothing special here.
No, in all of these analyses, the one thing that is consistent is that if you were to make LeBron James an NBA 2K, but it allow you to play with like emotional levers, irony would be set to zero.
Yeah. but then like there would be like one weird glitch where it would be 100%, and you wouldn't know when it was going to come or happen, but it would almost always otherwise be zero. To me, this quote reads like it would be on the back of like, you know, like the back of a waiter's shirt at a Texas Roadhouse. Like this is like it's just a corporate level of enjoyment of what is happening.
Poor Wendell Carter Jr., by the way, probably got dinged pretty good. Like he kind of didn't know where he was there for a second, but LeBron taking it all, making it all about him after that.
Yeah, LeBron decided to become Gallagher playing with props in the middle of an NBA game, as he has wanted to do. And by the way, Bill's point about this all being very corporate sounding also just reminds me, I need to tweet out the show link today using this exact text. So look forward to that on at Pablo Torre, the Texas Roadhouse of sports media personalities.
The free rolls of
Don't sleep on the bread, Texas Roadhouse.
Now that I would sleep on. I don't know about Max Strauss, but I would absolutely
pillows. Yeah.
Laid out some bread. Absolutely. I'm calling it a night. 100%.
Alabaster, what is next? And also, I'm very hungry.
We got another quote. Kevin Love played amazing. Threw his cane to the side and went out and balled out. Your choices are Charles Barkley, Jared Allen, JB Bickerstaff, or Udonis Haslam.
My favorite is when JB Bickerstaff is thrown into like any given number of options, and I'm like, is that the right answer or is that the most wrong answer? And I don't know.
Yeah, do you know JB Bickerstaff has this type of personality where he'll call out his player having a cane? I don't know. Right. It's got to be either A or B, right? But also Jared Allen seems like a very serious player who doesn't, you know, just throw out hilarious quotes here and there. So I'm gonna go with Charles Barkley.
I feel like Udonis Haslam is like too close in age to Kevin Love to do this. Yes. Like it's too on the nose. So I don't think it can be Udonis Haslam.
All right. B, Jared Allen, Alabaster. I believe we're going to vote that direction.
Kevin played amazing. You know, he threw his cane to the side and he went out and balled out, you know. he's been playing good.
I mean, he had the cane in the first half because he went scoreless in the first half, I believe.
Well, that's the thing is, like, it's kind of a little bit too close to the truth, right? Like, yes, 0 for 2 in the first half, 6 for 8 second. And if someone's going to just repeatedly make fun of how old I am, it would help if I'm not actually also like NBA old, which is, again, depressing because I'm looking this up as I speak. Kevin Love is 33.
Yeah, like he is a spring chicken compared to you and I. Now, I don't know about you guys. Like, I'm a casual NBA observer relative to my NFL coverage. Like you know how certain players will be in college for, like, 6 years? And you'd be like, how did they not graduate already? Like, how do they have eligibility? That's how I feel about Kevin Love on the Cavaliers. Like, it just feels like he's been there since, you know, like, the Vancouver Grizzlies were a team.
No,
I don't know how he's still there somehow.
I mean, the other members of that title team, like, think of the storylines. Think of the journey, Izzy, that LeBron and Kyrie Irving have been on. And meanwhile, Kevin Love's just still there. He's just hanging out. And
on the bench, by the way. Coming off of the bench behind Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Yeah, like, the Cavs are actually good this year, which the first thing that comes to mind is thank goodness for Kevin Love, because, you know, kind of I didn't ask for any of this. Like, he kind of asked to be traded there, but it's still like he got traded there and he stayed there and he did sign the extension. But again, who's going to turn that down? And so basically every time Kevin Love has a game like this, I'm just like, well, showcasing, because, you know, speaking of old NBA players, the Lakers have been rumored to be fishing for other players. And, you know, what better place for, you know, aged players to go these days than the Lakers? And so I don't know if he's going to end his season there, but it would be a pleasant story, one that makes the, you know, heart slightly warmer if they end up in the playoffs this year and he doesn't have LeBron and Kyrie next to him.
So I haven't worked out any of the salary information here, Barnwell. I have not done any of the things that you do when you create very detailed trade proposal columns, but Russell Westbrook for Kevin Love, make that happen. That would be hilarious.
I just love the idea of Russ just moving around the league. Like, he's on this road trip of America. Like, he's going to write the great American novel one Four Seasons hotel at a time. I also like, Pablo, you presenting Kevin Love like he's your friend from high school who never left, who, like, stayed and went to community college while you went off to college, and you come back 3 years later and you've been, you know, like reading Proust, and they're just, you know, they're still going to the same places you went when you were in high school. I feel like there's some nobility, some honor to that. I feel like Kevin Love should be lauded for his not real desire to stay in Cleveland, but the fact that he's managed to stay there long enough.
Well, look, Alabaster just took away the card that I was about to trumpet because the Cavs would be the 4 seed in the East if the playoffs started today. Like, that and the fact that all of us are at the very least 3 years older than Kevin Love, the two most startling stats that I've heard in the last we've been doing this show for 45 minutes. Yes, that is how startling all of this has been.
So then we should mention that the Cavs have also been linked to Ben Simmons, your boy, as a possible trade destination.
Oh,
so that would have to make you an automatic fan, I believe. Yeah,
there are many suitors for Ben Simmons, Izzy. It is not merely Cleveland. There is a robust trade market, as there should be, for one of the top 30 players in the NBA. And how dare you, as always, you lazy, lazy, alabaster-handed, alleged friend.
You guys want to move on?
Yeah,
I'd like to think that Trae Young would have blocked that shot, by the way. Is that him?
That is maybe your worst take of the day.
That's when you ask it. It's December. Izzy, you wait until 2022, in your words, to ask, is that Trae Young? Yes.
Speaking of Nick, can we move along? Because I'm clearly ahead of everybody.
All right, guys, we're going to do if then. We have one more topic. We'll give you a statement. You guys fill it out. And we're actually moving on to another sad Cav on a journey. If Dele ends up in this position again, then blank.
Oh.
And we have a clip.
Oh, man.
Speaking
I
of blocked shots that were never going to happen.
Yeah.
What is he thinking here? Like, look at his hand. Like, look where Dele's hand is, okay? Dele turned around and jumped as high as he could, the fingertips were still 3 inches south of the rim. What was he planning on blocking there?
So it's important to note that we now have a podcast for this show. So if you cannot see what just happened, imagine Matthew Dellavedova being cast in, like, West Side Story and then being asked to, like, jump off stage because his hands are both fully extended towards the sky and he pratfalls in a way that almost feels like it must be on purpose. But no, he just got yammed on by another human being playing in the Australian Basketball Association League. Which is apparently far more entertaining than I ever realized.
He even had the green turbo shoes on, and didn't come within 6 inches of the rim.
And it still
if it wasn't so funny that this was Matthew Dellavedova, like the whole scene would be hilarious because you've got the guy that gets knocked down and the way, the suddenness that he gets knocked down with, and then if you roll this again, you see him on the ground for a split second deciding, should I just play this out and really act injured or should I get up and defend myself? Watch, right? He goes for his own neck for a second while he's on the ground. He's like, well, the next angle, you'll see it. And then he's like, you know what? No, I've got to go defend myself. This is not the time to flop.
The other key component of this, of course, because, again, we are in Australia, is that it's not merely...
Boom!
If you were to do that in America, right, it's like, oh, you dunked on Delhi. But in Australia, it's like dunking on... like, not Michael Jordan, but like a Dream Team member, right? He's an all-time player.
I have first-hand knowledge of this very topic. I went to Australia a couple years ago, and I was just walking, minding my own business, kind of lost in thought, listening to a podcast, and I walked by a sporting goods store. And there was a life-size cardboard cutout of Matthew Dellavedova in the window.
What?
And for a moment, I was like, what on earth is this store about that Matthew Dellavedova is in the window? Like, did he do a personal appearance? Does he own this store? And then I remembered, oh yeah, I'm in Australia. That makes total sense, actually. It's not weird. They would have a 6 foot or 6 foot five tall Matthew Dellavedova staring at me from the window. Someone would actually buy this. So yes, absolutely. Outside of Ben Simmons, who I don't think is getting traded to the Melbourne City basketball team, we're talking about one of the most decorated players in NBA history from Australia.
I believe the deal was made, though, with Matthew Dellavedova apparel that if you buy one, you have to then buy a LeBron James jersey because he is responsible for all of Matthew Dellavedova's success, right?
Oh, Lord.
I think that's what was in the
I just like print. How ESPN's number one Max Strus fan can climb on his high horse enough to go yell at Matthew Dellavedova.
I said my friends. It wasn't talking about me.
That's a big difference. I mean, is there anything like is there anything Matthew could have done differently in this situation? Like, should he have just abandoned ship, pulled a hamstring?
You pretend you're injured like five steps before you even consider jumping. Bail and just pretend medical issues have taken over.
I think it speaks to the growth of the Australian league because Matthew Dellavedova, maybe as a younger player in this league, would think to himself, oh, there's no chance somebody's going to dunk on me. I'm going to go. And now it's just like, oh, wow, I'm not going to do that again. So it's, you know, life Australian basketball lessons from Delhi.
It improved while he was gone. You got to figure he came back expecting, okay, I'm going to get like 25 and 10 every night in this league. Right, and then he discovered I'm actually still Matthew Dellavedova, just in a slightly more appealing part of the world.
So I just remembered also, like, okay, so the whole, like, Cavs title team reunion is going to be amazing because not only is Matthew Dellavedova doing this, not only is obviously, you know, LeBron and Kyrie off on their own metaphysical journeys, J.R. Smith tweeted today that he got a 4.0 GPA in his first semester of college. And this
anything is possible.
Yes, I want more of this. And Tristan Thompson, by the way, needless to say, has been very busy in his life since winning that title. So, yes.
So many different paths have gone from that one team. I also want to point out, by the way, the man who dunks over Matthew Dellavedova would literally be banned from the NFL if he ever pulled that off in the league. That is like it'd be worse to get shoved and knocked over by the guy who hit him than it would be for this guy. I guess flexing on Matthew Dellavedova, which I can't blame him given the circumstances, but just incredible.
30 yards.
Yeah, John Mara would be very disappointed in the fact that dunk took place. Wow. Yeah.
We went so long, we can't even fit in a bonus topic.
Wow.
Heartbreaking.
Oh, speaking of which, if you do have good tweets that you wanted to send today, put them in reviews of the Debatable podcast.
Yes.
Leave 5 stars, and if you do that, we will very cravenly and transactionally reward you for it by reading it aloud on a future episode of this live fake television show.
Yes, we'll have Mina answer a question for you on her podcast if you leave a 5-star review of Debatable under our podcast.
That's right.
That's the Bill Barnwell promise.
It's a great scheme. Let's just promise more MENA to people so that we don't have to do the work.
Just not busy. We are.